Diverging Paths, Part 3. The fifth story in Reentry, a Star Wars fanfiction series, written by Flamethrower and read by Chantress. Republic Date 5199, 11th month, 3rd day, Naboo Orbit. The hangar bay they'd arrived in was below, but its contents were a vast change from 2 hours before. Droids were everywhere, heavily armed, and great swaths of them were being efficiently packed away into waiting armored transports. The Radiant Seven was long gone, escaping to safety the moment the Trade Federation had turned on them all. Ventilation shafts were not meant for someone of Qui-Gon's size. Even with his head turned awkwardly to one side, his skull was wedged against the ceiling of the shaft. Obi-Wan knelt in front of him, working on removing the bolts from the grate that blocked the exit. Anakin was pressed against Qui-Gon's back, his chin wedged into Qui-Gon's opposite shoulder so that he could see what was going on.
"I had wondered why you told Captain Matacor to raise the ship's shields as we left," Qui-Gon sent.
He had worried at the time that the gesture might be taken as an insult by the Trade Federation, but Qui-Gon no longer believed the Trade Federation had ever planned to negotiate the Naboo blockade. Poison gas, battle droids, destroyer droids. There was no doubt that the Federation wanted them dead.
"I was hoping it would be a frivolous waste of energy," Obi-Wan replied in a grim tone.
The last bolt came free, but there was no way the grate would fit into the already crowded shaft. Obi-Wan made a face and then allowed the grate to drop, muffling the sound of its fall with the Force so that no droid heads turned in their direction. Qui-Gon had to admire his partner's restraint, knowing the events that were lining up, and still standing back and letting the Trade Federation choose to act. He would never have expected such a bold move from the Nemoidians. Hells, he'd said so not 5 minutes before the Federation tried to kill the three of them. One at a time, they dropped several meters to the hangar bay floor. Qui-Gon caught Anakin, who smiled his thanks as Qui-Gon set him down. They hid behind a high wall of stacked cargo containers, a perfect vantage point to watch the droids without being discovered.
"It's an invasion army," Qui-Gon whispered,
still not quite able to believe it.
"Yes," Obi-Wan replied, unsurprised. "Someone is trying to force the signing of the new treaty."
"Someone?" Anakin looked up at Obi-Wan with troubled eyes. "If this is the Trade Federation's army, then they're the ones making the Queen sign it. Right?" Qui-Gon shook his head.
"Obi-Wan is correct. The Trade Federation doesn't have the courage to do something like this on their own."
"It would take one hell of a push, though." More transports were arriving in the hangar, ready to be loaded with deactivated droids.
"We've got to warn the Naboo and contact Chancellor Valorum," Qui-Gon said.
Technically, they were acting outside of Republic authorization, but Finnis would need to know of this new development as quickly as possible.
"Stow away aboard separate transports. We'll meet back together on the surface."
Obi-Wan nodded, a funny smile on his face. Qui-Gon had the disturbing feeling that he'd just said exactly what Obi-Wan expected him to.
"Take Anakin with you," Obi-Wan said. "I have a feeling I'm going to get a rough ride on the way down."
"Pick a different one," Qui-Gon suggested.
Obi-Wan glanced at him, surprised, and then shook his head with a soft laugh.
"That's probably a good idea," Obi-Wan admitted. Take him with you anyway. You know how much I hate flying in zero-G.
You just don't want him to see you throw up, Qui-Gon couldn't resist teasing.
No, Anakin refuted, shaking his head with a wide grin on his face. He just doesn't want it to land on me, and really, I'm okay with that. The ride down was uneventful. The transport disgorged its contents in the woods. Qui-Gon and Anakin escaped before the droids activated, but wound up caught in a stampede as every living creature in the area ran in a panic from the mechanical army. Qui-Gon tossed Anakin over his shoulder and followed the wildlife, surrounded by the thunder of hooves and feet. Anakin clutched Qui-Gon's robe and hung on for dear life. They were free of the stampede just in time for Anakin to swear and point out a new threat. They both ran on foot, pursued by a scout flyer that had no compunctions about firing at them.
Stay with me, Qui-Gon ordered. Go where I go.
Anakin nodded, darting along at Qui-Gon's heels.
Master Qui-Gon, there's someone up there, Anakin shouted.
Qui-Gon saw the tall figure and realized that whoever it was, he was not getting out of the line of fire. In fact, Qui-Gon was almost certain that he was about to wave and greet them. No survival instincts whatsoever.
Move!
Qui-Gon roared, and received a bewildered look for his efforts. He and Anakin glanced at each other before they both started yelling for the creature to get the hell out of the way.
Damn it, he grumbled,
and tackled the oblivious fool to the ground in a move that would have done the rough-and-tumble sports teams on Corellia proud. Anakin plastered himself down next to Qui-Gon just as the scout roared overhead. Lasers sizzled in the air, tearing up the earth all around them. Qui-Gon sprang up, ordered both his charges to stay put, and took his lightsaber from his belt and ignited it in one smooth motion. The scout went down from a reflected bolt, but another was approaching. And with it, thankfully, Obi-Wan.
Duck,
he sent, and Obi-Wan complied, water droplets flying off of him. The other scout joined its brethren in a smoking pile.
What happened to you?
Qui-Gon asked, leaving the long-eared creature, a Gungan, he was almost certain, to babble at Anakin in a mix of panic, delight, and thankfulness. Obi-Wan brushed strands of wet, dripping hair away from his face.
Managed to pick an even worse ride down than before, he said.
He smiled and touched his lightsaber, still hanging at his side. We all went for a swim when the transport malfunctioned. I used up a great deal of energy in giving myself an escape route. Qui-Gon nodded, reassured. The power cell would recharge in short order. In the meantime, the Gungan had reached Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, with Anakin trailing along behind, looking amused.
"Yuuzhan saved me," he said joyfully, throwing his long arms around Qui-Gon in a hug. "Thanking yous."
"You're welcome," Qui-Gon replied, accepting the thanks and politely ignoring the fact that he had nearly broken his collarbone saving the Gungan's life.
He hoped it was youth that had kept the Gungan from realizing the danger he was in, and not dim-wittedness.
"You should get out of here," Qui-Gon told him. "More of those droids will be heading this way."
"More?"
the Gungan blurted in horror, raising his eye stalks in a panic.
"More, did you spake?"
The Gungan, who introduced himself as Jar Jar Binks, decided that if more droids were approaching, they should all return to his city. He led the way, chattering nonstop without seeming to care if anyone was listening or not. Anakin trudged along behind Jar Jar, with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan following just after.
"Where the hell are we?"
Qui-Gon asked, trying to figure their location based upon descent and its knowledge of the local terrain. The Naboo had forests like these on several continents. They had no geological locator. Like most of their gear, it was still aboard the Radiant Seven. "We're on the continent opposite the capital," Obi-Wan told him with certainty. Qui-Gon considered his internal map of the planet, committed to memory some days before. "There are almost no colonial settlements on this continent because of the Gungan tribes. The Trade Federation is going to cross the North Sea to invade." Obi-Wan nodded. "They'll be in Theed before anyone has the chance to react." Qui-Gon frowned. The tactics were simplistic, but effective. The Naboo had no standing army to repel a full-scale ground invasion. The airborne defense force would be surrounded and useless before their pilots received an order to fly. "All of this just for a trade treaty?" he wondered. There just didn't seem to be enough for the Federation to gain to make their actions worthwhile, especially if Lot Dodd was going to try to convince the Senate to overlook their invasion of the planet. "It doesn't have anything to do with a fucking treaty at all," Obi-Wan spat, but would not elaborate further. Jar Jar Binks didn't mention that going back to his home city would get him arrested. Qui-Gon's estimation of him climbed a few notches from where it had been sitting near the bottom. Self-preservation did not seem to be the Gungan's strong suit, but he was loyal and full of good intentions. So it was that their group gained a member, an unfamiliar undersea vehicle, and a shortcut to Theed through the ocean vents that surrounded the planet core. Anakin piloted, listening with a cheerful smile as Jar Jar told them all about how he'd managed to get himself banned from Oda Gunga. From the sounds of it, it involved quite a bit of hapless property destruction. There was useful information about Gungan society mixed in. Qui-Gon discerned that Naboo-Gungan relations were not as amiable as the Republic had been led to believe. The back of the craft was not designed for two passengers. It meant close quarters, something Qui-Gon was not opposed to, but the moment Obi-Wan's shoulder rested against his, Qui-Gon became aware of just how drained the younger man felt. Qui-Gon lifted his arm in invitation, and Obi-Wan willingly pressed in against his side. It was a milestone in their potential relationship, one Qui-Gon would have been much happier about if he wasn't so worried. He ran his hands through Obi-Wan's long hair, soothing with touch as he had once done for his much younger Padawan. And touching his partner in any way made him ridiculously happy, even in the depths of his concern.
"What's wrong?" Qui-Gon asked. "A bad landing shouldn't be enough to leave you feeling like this."
Obi-Wan sighed, resting his head on Qui-Gon's shoulder. The fact that he did not also tighten his shields, Qui-Gon counted as a victory.
"It's Jar Jar. I know him. Anakin does, too, though I'm not certain if he remembers. He's... well... funny. Jar Jar seems far less annoying this time."
Qui-Gon looked at the Gungan. Jar Jar's ears were waving about in time with his hands while he talked. Jar Jar Binks must be an acquired taste.
"It isn't just Jar Jar, is it?" Qui-Gon hazarded.
"No," Obi-Wan admitted, shifting his position so that he could look up at Qui-Gon.
"There have been so many times that we've run into people that I remember. I want to greet them as friends, not the strangers they know themselves to be. It's hard. Here on Naboo, it's going to be so much worse. Here, there are people that I've known for years, not just a few days or weeks."
Qui-Gon nodded his understanding. He'd tried, over the years, to picture himself in Obi-Wan's place, failing each time. He just couldn't imagine walking the same part of his life twice over. Force knew it had been hard enough the first time. Worse, Qui-Gon thought, was the temptation of it all. Qui-Gon didn't know how Obi-Wan withstood the desire to simply grab someone's hand, to tell them not to do what they were about to, as it would lead to dire consequences or death.
This is it, though, isn't it? This is the event you told the Council about.
He'd suspected as much, considering Obi-Wan's words on Coruscant, but Obi-Wan had still been inclined to caution.
So far, yes.
Obi-Wan's eyes were a clear gray, a sign of deep concern.
There is still a chance, as small as it is now, that I'm wrong.
Qui-Gon stared into his partner's eyes. There was something there, some unknown fear.
Obi-Wan, right or wrong, I'll still be here. Whatever happens, we'll see it through together.
On a whim, or perhaps, Qui-Gon was responding to the warmth that filled Obi-Wan's eyes at his words. He leaned forward, just wanting to kiss the lips that were so maddeningly close. Of course, that's when Jar Jar Binks screamed bloody murder. The pod jolted. Both he and Obi-Wan were thrown forward, almost colliding with the seats in front of them. Qui-Gon recovered his seat first, glancing over to find Obi-Wan staring up in mild alarm at something outside their craft. Qui-Gon followed his line of sight to find a sea monster. There was no other word for it. Roaring at them, gigantic mouth gaping wide. The noise from the panicked Gungan was worse than any sea creature. Qui-Gon placed his hand on Jar Jar's shoulder, meaning only to calm the frantic youth.
"Relax," he said,
while Anakin concentrated on getting them away from the threat. Qui-Gon drew back his hand in surprise when Jar Jar slumped in his seat, nearly unconscious from the gentle Force touch. He gave Obi-Wan a baffled look. Never had he seen such a mild Force suggestion cause such an extreme reaction.
"I think you overdid it," Obi-Wan said, smiling at him.
If he had any problems with the fact that his partner had just tried to kiss him, he was keeping them to himself. Qui-Gon cursed the Gungan, the sea monster, the ocean, the rocks, the water, anything he could possibly think of that might have had a hand in current events. There was no reclaiming that moment, not right now. Anakin got them out of the tunnel without allowing the sea creature to snack on them. As he turned the pod to put on speed, another, bigger creature came along and had the first one for dinner.
"There's always a bigger fish," Obi-Wan said softly. "You know, I think that's my line," Qui-Gon replied, disturbed.
He had been thinking the exact same thing. "I don't care which one of you was supposed to say that," Anakin called, a frown of concentration on his face. "Just tell me which way to go, because our Gungan navigator isn't going to be much help anytime soon." It was a relatively simple matter to find their way through the passages that surrounded the planet Kor, at least when they avoided inhabited burrows. Anakin was the one to find the tunnel leading back to the surface, following the currents and a hint of sunlight. Theed was gorgeous, a sprawling architectural gem that had incorporated the area's natural water features in its design. It was also crawling with the Trade Federation's droid army. Finding the Queen's entourage turned out to be easier than Qui-Gon had expected. They were being marched down the street under heavy guard. Obi-Wan, close at his side, already had his lightsaber hilt in his hand, a tense expression marring his features. Anakin was just behind his master, with Jar Jar following, trying not to whimper too loudly. Qui-Gon took a quick look over the stone walkway. The height was not bad, and would allow them to get the drop on the droids guarding the Naboo.
"Anakin, can you handle this?"
he asked. Anakin poked his head up to take in the view, and ducked back out of sight almost in the same breath. "Yeah, it's not bad. I can roll if I can't stick the landing, and you guys will probably have the droids dismembered before I have to worry about it anyway." Obi-Wan gave his Padawan a faint smile.
"Don't worry, Anakin. I'm sure there will be plenty more where those came from."
Qui-Gon nodded.
"Let's go."
They freed the Naboo, leaving the remains of the droid battalion lying in the street. The Naboo's security forces commander, Captain Panaka, led them to the hangar after Qui-Gon kept Sayo Bibble from starting an argument over procedure at exactly the worst time.
"Would you please stop that?"
Obi-Wan begged as they darted for cover, keeping watch over the unarmed handmaidens.
"Stop what?"
Qui-Gon asked in confusion, motioning the queen forward when the way was clear. It was interesting. Panaka was doing his job well, but his eyes darted towards the girls far more often than seemed necessary.
"Quoting," Obi-Wan replied, which made no sense at all.
It took a few minutes of argument to convince the queen that it was necessary to come to Coruscant. Obi-Wan didn't say a word, but he was developing a tic under his eye that led Qui-Gon to suspect he was doing more quoting. Once that was done, there was still the matter of the droids guarding the ship and the piloting crew.
"Would you like to break them, or shall I?"
Qui-Gon asked, striding through the hangar as if he had every right to be there. It was almost surprising how often that confidence worked better than skulking about.
"Oh, I'll take care of it. Why should we deviate from the script now?"
Obi-Wan returned at his most caustic. The pilots were freed, the droids were destroyed, everyone was on board the ship that needed to be, and no one got shot. Even Jar Jar managed to get inside without tripping up himself or anyone else. Qui-Gon directed the Gungan into the maintenance bay, told him to stay put, and made his way to the cockpit. Obi-Wan was already there, looking grim.
"Still can't get a signal out," the pilot said. "That must be one hell of a jamming system." "Not orbital at all, then," Panaka said with a frown. "I bet it's the entire system they've closed down, Rick." "There's the blockade," Rick said, looking up at the viewscreen. "Hang on."
They came under fire within moments. Anakin arrived just in time to hear the news that the shield generator was hit.
"Oh no," he muttered. "That's bad. That's close to a lot of important stuff."
The maintenance droids rolled out at Rick's command. All but one were sacrificed before the damage was repaired. The pilot kept up a running commentary on their status, which was almost hard to hear over Anakin and Obi-Wan's dual chant.
"Not the hyperdrive. Not the hyperdrive. The hyperdrive is leaking."
"Balls," Anakin grumbled, and went to see to the drive in question. Obi-Wan sighed and sat down at the navigator's helm. He brought up a chart of the quadrant to look for landing sites, just as Qui-Gon mentioned that necessity aloud, winding up on the receiving end of Panaka's full, attentive ire in the process.
"Fuck. Damn it!"
Qui-Gon glanced behind him.
"What is it?"
he asked. And then he saw the planet listing that Obi-Wan was staring at.
"If she's truly the queen, I'm going to sit down and eat my boots,"
Qui-Gon muttered, collapsing onto the part of the bunk that Anakin wasn't already curled up on.
The berths were not large enough. While his back lay on the surface, his knees were bent, and his boots rested squarely on the floor. The boy had a broad grin on his face.
Good news, Master Qui-Gon. You won't have to eat them.
Oh?
Qui-Gon glanced up at Anakin, who looked far too mischievous for his own good.
And what is your opinion on this matter, Padawan Skywalker?
Anakin shrugged, pretending nonchalance. Padme, I guess I'm cheating a little bit, but if you watch her and the woman dressed as the queen, you can tell she's doing more than just advising. Padme. Qui-Gon knew that name, though it had been years since he'd heard it. He sat up, giving Anakin his full attention.
She's the Padme that you remembered? From before?
Yeah. Anakin put down his datapad, starting to look uncomfortable. I never forgot her, unlike a lot of the other stuff. I'm not sure how to talk to her. Some kid showing up and speaking about things she hasn't told him yet is going to be creepy. And I don't want to be creepy.
Anakin, while you are many things, creepy is not one of them,
Qui-Gon said in reassurance, ruffling the boy's hair. Anakin ducked away, smiling.
What else do you remember?
Qui-Gon asked. Perhaps between Obi-Wan's caution and Anakin's vague recollections, Qui-Gon might gain a better idea of what the hell was going on. Anakin halted in the midst of reaching for the datapad again. What do you mean? Underneath his further attempt at unconcern was a great deal of nervousness.
I suppose I was wondering if seeing your Padme again had caused you to remember anything else.
Qui-Gon noted the sudden tense set of Anakin's shoulders.
I'm not going to press you, Anakin. I was just curious.
Anakin bit his lip, and when he looked up at Qui-Gon, his eyes were filled with dread. You won't mention anything to Obi-Wan, will you? Please? I mean, I know I shouldn't keep anything from my master, but you're my master too, and as long as I say something to one of you... Qui-Gon shushed him with gentle fingers, trying to still Anakin's rising panic.
Easy, Annie. If there is danger involved, I may have no choice, but I won't tell him yet, as long as you explain what's wrong.
He hugged Anakin close, understanding that his shared Padawan needed the contact. Sometimes physical reassurance was more important to Anakin than words.
If it can wait, I will let you tell him when the time is right.
Okay. I mean, I think I'm okay with that. Anakin snuggled closer, so Qui-Gon draped his arm around the boy. It's just... I've been having a lot of dreams for the past couple of months. Most of them are okay, but there are some that... they're frightening. No, it's worse than that. Master Qui-Gon, they frighten the crap out of me, Anakin said. And Qui-Gon hugged him tighter when goose flesh broke out on Anakin's arms. There's someone doing horrible things to people. And sometimes I think I'm doing horrible things to people, too. Except that I'm not really me anymore. Then there are dreams where Padme and I are married, and we've got kids. And all of us are living happily together near the lake, here on Naboo. Except that one's a lie. I always wake up upset from that one, because I know it never happened.
Qui-Gon realized Anakin was crying, sniffling in misery. He reached into his belt pouch and fished out a wad of clean cloth, giving it to the boy.
Anakin, it will be all right. You know that none of that has to come true.
Except for those parts I suspect you might still want, he thought, remembering the adoring way the young Padawan had gazed at the handmaiden queen they were discussing.
I know. And Obi-Wan knows that, too, Anakin said, his expression tear-stained and utterly serious. But I also know that now is not a good time to tell Obi-Wan about any of this. Please don't say anything.
Anakin, you'll have to tell him sometime. This is important, Qui-Gon reminded him gently.
After Naboo? Sure. After Naboo, I'll tell him that I dance in the nude like a Keely bird if you want me to. Just don't make me say anything yet. He doesn't need that kind of distraction, Anakin said, frowning.
Qui-Gon stared at the boy in front of him, feeling the currents of the Force swirl around them and upset.
Annie, what happens on this mission? What's wrong with it?
Anakin shook his head. I don't remember, Master Qui-Gon. Honestly, I don't. It has something to do with you, or him, or maybe even both of you. I know that it's bad, just not what.
On impulse, Qui-Gon drew Anakin into another embrace, crushing the boy against his chest.
I'll watch over him. I promise you.
Anakin wiggled against Qui-Gon's tunics, putting up a token struggle of protest.
I know you will, and I bet you're wondering where he is.
Yes, that was going to be my next question, Qui-Gon said, smiling.
He's helping Padme clean R2.
R2-D2, the droid that had repaired the ship's shields. Qui-Gon looked down at Anakin.
He's something else that is exceptionally familiar, isn't he?
Anakin nodded.
Yep. R2 is something else, Master Qui-Gon.
He grinned his thanks when Qui-Gon shed his cloak and laid it over Anakin. Nearly 5 years of Coruscant living, and still Anakin always felt cold on transports. His master was the same way.
You should have kissed him anyway, you know, Anakin said as Qui-Gon palmed the door open.
Qui-Gon glanced back over his shoulder at Anakin.
Oh?
He was trying to sound casual, as unconcerned as Anakin over the mention of Padme. Probably failing badly, too, given that his heart was trying to pound its way out of his chest.
Yeah, I'm sorry I managed to pilot into the only inhabited burrow in the sea wall, but you shouldn't have let a little thing like a screaming Gungan keep you from that.
It was important, Anakin finished, as if he had the final say on the matter.
Maybe it was. I'll keep that in mind, young Padawan, Qui-Gon said, giving the boy a low, sweeping bow.
Anakin giggled.
Finish your coursework for the week, and you can show me all of your old haunts on Tatooine when we get there.
Yes, Master Qui-Gon, Anakin said.
He picked up his datapad with renewed cheer. The droid was already clean, though still in Padme's company. They had both been cornered by Jar Jar Binks, who was once again spewing verbiage at garbled high speed. R2-D2 was making half-hearted beeps. Padme was giving the Gungan her full attention. It was possible, given the bias that Jar Jar had spoken of earlier,
that he was the first of his species that Padme had ever seen. Seeing Qui-Gon, Padme waved at him, and pointed in the direction of the ship's observation lounge when Qui-Gon gave her a questioning look. He nodded and took his leave before Jar Jar sucked him into the conversation as well. Interesting that she'd so quickly understood what it was that Qui-Gon had wanted to know. There was no mention of the Queen of Naboo's midi-chlorian count in the public files, but Qui-Gon would eat his boots and his cloak if she turned out to be a Null. Obi-Wan was standing alone in the lounge. He was watching the stars go by, their pace appallingly slow. Having a malfunctioning hyperdrive made it a long trip, turning a hyperspace journey of a few hours into several days of travel. The ship was capable of short jumps, coaxed along by their pilot in an attempt to conserve fuel, but Obi-Wan was certain that the motivator was going to be fried by the end of it all. Qui-Gon had meant his first words to be of greeting, or of Anakin. Instead, Qui-Gon found himself asking, "Why Tatooine?" Obi-Wan turned to face Qui-Gon, and there were lines of stress around his eyes that had not existed a few hours ago. "The Force said it was the way to go." Qui-Gon stepped closer, sensing that Obi-Wan would not be averse to company.
"You don't sound pleased about that."
Anakin seemed happy to be visiting his former home. Obi-Wan looked as if he wanted to set things on fire with his eyes. Obi-Wan gave vent to a frustrated sigh.
"No, I suppose not. May I tell you about my first visit to Tatooine, Qui-Gon?"
Qui-Gon nodded, and Obi-Wan began to speak. There was a bitter thread in the tale, one whose origin Qui-Gon couldn't trace. Obi-Wan explained how they had arrived, how he had volunteered to stay with the ship. There were repairs that needed to be completed aside from the hyperdrive, and Obi-Wan seemed to be the only competent mechanic among the entire lot of escapees from Naboo. That was true this time as well. The exact sameness of their circumstances was enough to leave Qui-Gon chilled. The hyperdrive motivator was the critical element, though, and that was what Qui-Gon, Jar Jar, R2-D2, and the handmaiden Padme went into the settlement of Mos Espa to retrieve.
"Padme the Queen," Qui-Gon said, amused.
Obi-Wan smiled.
"I take it Anakin told you?"
When Qui-Gon nodded, he went on.
"You discovered four things at once that day. Toydarians are immune to Force suggestion. They don't take Republic credits on Tatooine. This particular Toydarian had the motivator we needed. And you found Anakin."
Qui-Gon felt his eyes go wide.
"Force, Obi-Wan," he whispered.
Suddenly, so much about this mission made sense. It wasn't just about the Trade Federation's unusual tactics, but about the Order's discovery of the Chosen One, almost 5 years too late to be accepted for training. Tatooine no longer seemed like such a random place for Obi-Wan to have lived. That planet was acting like a pivot point for fate.
"I take it the Toydarian in question is Watto," Qui-Gon guessed. "I can see now what you meant about his taking care of Shmi and Anakin."
Most slave owners didn't hold on to their merchandise for that long, not without some element of compassion involved. Obi-Wan nodded.
"You sent me a blood sample that night by transmission, with very little explanation of what you were up to.
You and the others were staying in the Skywalker home in the slave quarter that night, on Anakin's invitation. I ran that sample 3 damn times. 23,000. Sometimes I still have trouble believing it. Qui-Gon had a moment's guilt, thinking of his partner's altered midichlorian count, a fact that he and the Council had kept secret from Obi-Wan. They should really have made mention of it before now, but this wasn't the best moment to reveal that particular truth. You told me you had an idea for getting the parts. You did not tell me, Obi-Wan said, giving Qui-Gon a crooked smile, that it involved betting on Anakin's participation in a pod race. Qui-Gon stared at him, agog. I did what? Oh, that's not all, Obi-Wan said, his eyes dancing with suppressed laughter. Anakin did volunteer, mind you, but since it was his pod and he was a slave, he needed a sponsor to enter the race. You entered into a bargain with Watto. He would sponsor the boy, and you provided the ship, this ship, as collateral for the entry fee. If Anakin won, you got the parts and the ship, while Watto collected the prize money. He didn't mention what would have happened if Anakin lost, but that was quite unnecessary. Force gods, I'm a manipulative bastard, Qui-Gon whispered, still not quite certain if Obi-Wan was being serious. But Anakin was a child, an untrained child. I must have been... desperate, Obi-Wan finished for him. He was no longer amused. You were desperate. Not only did we need to get the Queen of Naboo to Coruscant before the Trade Federation stripped the planet bare of people and resources, you had a boy in front of you who should have been with the Jedi from birth. As it was, Anakin was a self-trained, force-using child, with enough power to shut down a sun if he thought about it hard enough. I take it Anakin won the pod race, Qui-Gon replied in a faint voice. He knew that Obi-Wan believed that Qui-Gon was not quite the same person at this point in time, not like Obi-Wan remembered from before, but this... I don't care how desperate I was. I could have gotten him killed. Obi-Wan's expression softened. If it's any consolation, Anakin had been in 4 previous races, and survived them all. He didn't finish any of them either, but that didn't diminish his enthusiasm for the sport. To my intense regret, he added. It's not much of a consolation, no, Qui-Gon said, still reeling from what he'd been told. Obi-Wan, what have you changed? In these last 4 years, what have you changed? Obi-Wan seemed to understand his urgency. Anakin, you were with me for that. The Yunchuri Uprising, and Micah, he would have died during the war. You were there for that, too. Yes, Qui-Gon whispered, reaching up to touch Obi-Wan's left shoulder, where the scar began, the one he had earned by saving Micah Geet's life. When it looked as if both of you were going to die, that wasn't exactly a bright spot. No, I guess not. Obi-Wan stared back at him, hands loose at his sides, as if waiting. What else? Qui-Gon asked. I haven't changed anything else. You... Qui-Gon hesitated, as he realized he didn't know what to say.
Nothing else? Not a thing, Obi-Wan said with a slight shrug, the barest hint of movement under Qui-Gon's hand. Qui-Gon realized he had, perhaps, allowed his touch to linger too long, and let his hand fall back to his side. It sounds strange, I know. I thought there would be something else, and then it never happened. It hinged on choices that others made, and I didn't need to do anything at all. Qui-Gon knew there was still much he was not being told.
Will you tell me what happened then? Could it hurt now to tell me of things that are now in the past for both of us?
Obi-Wan hesitated, shaking his head as he took a step back.
That's really not a good idea, especially right now. It isn't as if we don't have time and opportunity, Qui-Gon countered, thinking of the long days ahead. Please. When once you said that I was different, I didn't take you seriously. I see now that you were being truthful. I need to know what happened, that I could become a man who would send a child to perform a task that would be dangerous even for a Jedi Master.
Obi-Wan closed his eyes briefly, as if Qui-Gon's words had pained him.
All right.
He held out his hand. Qui-Gon took it, feeling no little amount of trepidation as Obi-Wan led him to one of the wide cushioned benches.
I will tell you, Obi-Wan said as they seated themselves. You will not like it.
Qui-Gon didn't doubt that at all. He listened as Obi-Wan told him of Micah's death. That one was not a surprise, not after what had happened 2 years ago. The circumstances were a bit different, but in the end, the outcome. Then Obi-Wan told him of Tull's death, a year after Micah's, and some of the things that came after. Even that bare-bones summary was almost too much to bear. When Obi-Wan had finished speaking, Qui-Gon thanked him and walked, wooden-legged, from the room. He didn't know if Obi-Wan watched him go, but the pair bond was filled with regret, as if Obi-Wan wished he had never spoken of any of it at all. Qui-Gon wanted to spend the next 3 days in meditation, to be on an even keel again when their mission to safeguard the Queen resumed with their visit to Tatooine. He did meditate sometimes, but far more of his attention was taken up by dealing with the Naboo contingent aboard ship. Qui-Gon spoke with each of them in turn, learning things that were of interest, some of which might actually be helpful if the Nemoidians magically changed their minds and decided to negotiate. Doubtful, but stranger things had happened. Anakin and Obi-Wan were doing much the same as he was, though Anakin was having the most success. The boy had finally gathered the courage to speak to Padme, and was now chattering away at her about Naboo, about the Senate, about his Jedi training, about her family, about his family, any subject the two of them could come up with. It wasn't just patience on Padme's part, an older girl dealing with a precocious child. Padme and Anakin seemed well matched. There was, more often than not, a wide smile on the young queen's face, and a bright-eyed grin on Anakin's. She had not been all that annoyed by Anakin having guessed that the girl wearing the ceremonial robes and makeup was not actually the Queen of Naboo.
Qui-Gon, listening through the training bond, learned that the other girl was named Sabe, the handmaiden closest in appearance and voice to Padme Nabari. Obi-Wan had his own conversations with the False Queen, never letting on that he knew of her true identity, but he always made sure that Padme was nearby so that she could hear what was said. When Padme was busy with Sabe and the others of the Naboo contingent, Anakin went to the cockpit to spend time with Rick Oli. Rick had adopted the Padawan the moment he realized that Anakin was already as much of a pilot as he was, despite his youth. The other rescued starfighter pilots had followed suit, turning Anakin into their mascot. Discussing ships and piloting and space lanes and shortcuts gave them all something to do during the long journey, when tedium could have led to mutiny. Panaka was the only Naboo remaining that was still standoffish, but the man still sorely felt his failure to protect the Queen during the initial invasion. He was formal with the Jedi, and made it clear that he was an ally to their cause as long as their cause remained devoted to Amidala's safety. Panaka also had no qualms sharing his opinions. He believed Qui-Gon to be foolish, and Obi-Wan to be young and inexperienced, especially in regards to their choosing Tatooine as a safe harbor. Anakin escaped Panaka's criticism by simple virtue of being too young to warrant the captain's attention. When Qui-Gon had time alone, when maintaining the ship and scrounging among limited supplies for the two large crew didn't eat up the day, he just wanted to rail, to scream, anything but sit down and continue to be rational about his own feelings. It didn't feel reasonable to be told about things he had never done, that had never happened. There had never been anything rational about the life Obi-Wan had dreamed, and Qui-Gon firmly believed that it wasn't a dream, wasn't a vision at all, no matter what Master Yarriel had to say on the matter. The Force had granted Obi-Wan two lives, and 4.5 years later, Qui-Gon was still the one who was having the most trouble coming to terms with it all. Qui-Gon could admit, after long hours on his knees as he meditated his way through a night cycle, that his primary source of frustration was himself. The decisions Obi-Wan had said Qui-Gon had made, the darkness he had nearly fallen to after Tall's murder in that other Wen, he could see himself following that path. Qui-Gon had almost lost himself to it after Xanatos had tried to kill him, albeit in a different way. Losing people he loved had always had a significant effect on him. He was honest enough to admit it was because he did not let people into his heart easily. He had many companions, but few close friends, and even fewer lovers. It was the anger Obi-Wan had spoken of. Anger that Qui-Gon had turned on his own Padawan that bothered Qui-Gon the most. Obi-Wan had almost been radiating guilt as he had spoken of Tall's death. It sounded like something his other self had either ignored or encouraged. That thought disturbed him greatly. Enough, Qui-Gon thought, and climbed to his feet. At that point, he was accomplishing nothing more than spinning in mental circles. Only a few hours remained before making planetfall on Tatooine. With the hyperdrive now silenced, he wanted to take a closer look at it. Qui-Gon was not a gifted mechanic, not like his partner in their Padawan, but he could diagnose problems well enough. Maybe they would get lucky, and the hyperdrive had survived the trip with minimal mechanical breakdown. Small replacement parts, infinitely easier to come by than a new motivator for Nubian J-27, would be a blessing from the Force right now. Qui-Gon was not surprised to find Obi-Wan already up to his elbows in hyperdrive components. They did tend to consider the same problems at similar times. Obi-Wan offered him a cautious smile of greeting, and only then did Qui-Gon realize that he had been effectively avoiding his partner for much of the journey, a feat that was not easy to accomplish.
"Where's Anakin?" Qui-Gon asked as he rolled up his sleeves.
"Asleep," Obi-Wan replied,
handing him two spanners and pointing to the secondary casing for the motivator. Qui-Gon resisted the urge to sigh, knowing without needing to be told that the motivator had failed after all. They stripped the drive in short order, laying out parts and turning the pristine royal viewing room into a mess of metal and grease. The small replaceable parts Qui-Gon had hoped for were also present, catalogued by R2-D2 as they worked. Qui-Gon looked at the projected parts list and frowned. The fuel would be the cheapest of it.
"Damn, that's an expensive list, even if Tatooine accepted Republic currency."
Obi-Wan looked at him, mischievous smile in place.
"Good thing I asked Mace for half Republic, half Cho Mar." "What did Mace say when you asked him for hut funds again?"
Qui-Gon wanted to know. Trugut was slowly replacing Cho Mar, thanks to another hut power struggle, but Cho Mar still held much of its value.
"He asked me if I thought it would be necessary."
Obi-Wan sighed.
"I told him that I hoped it would not be."
He put his elbows on top of the hyperdrive casing, resting his head in his hands. Such gestures made him look so very young, despite the faint lines of early stresses that marked his face, and the knowledge that hid behind his eyes. Qui-Gon swallowed, struck by a surge of such protectiveness, of such longing, that it almost stole his breath.
"I'm sorry."
Obi-Wan did not pretend to misunderstand what Qui-Gon was apologizing for.
"Don't be, Qui. You've done nothing wrong."
Qui-Gon hesitated.
"I don't know if that's true. Some part of me did you wrong. Some when. And I'm the only version of me here that can say anything to you."
Obi-Wan straightened and came out from behind the discarded casing, standing less than an arm's length away.
"I accept your apology, Qui-Gon Jinn, for the meaning you wish it to convey," he said, and then smiled at him. "You aren't ever going to let it go otherwise."
Qui-Gon smiled back.
"No, I wouldn't have. I've done a lot of thinking, Obi-Wan. Ultimately, I find that for now, I only have one question."
Obi-Wan raised one eyebrow.
"And what's that? What happens next?"
Obi-Wan grinned, the sober mood between them broken.
"We go to Tatooine, bargain for the hyperdrive motivator, and get the hell out of there as soon as we possibly can. And we'll be roasting while we're at it," Qui-Gon added,
thinking with dread about the twin suns. He had not liked the planet's intense heat.
"Do you think Watto will have that same motivator again?"
The chances had to be astronomical, and yet, here they were. Obi-Wan shrugged.
"Whatever it is we need, it's down there. The only way to find out for sure is to go look." "That's a Yoda answer," Qui-Gon accused with a smile. "Well, it's a better response than, I don't fucking know," Obi-Wan countered, his eyes bright with humor.
They stared at each other, conversation suddenly grinding to a halt as that moment spread out between them. Qui-Gon realized that they were both waiting. While he was almost certain of what he was waiting for, sometimes Obi-Wan was more difficult to read than any Jedi alive. Qui-Gon had almost made up his mind to do something about it, and to hell with the consequences, when he was interrupted. Again. Panaka stuck his head in the viewing room doorway, and frowned at the mess before giving them both an imposing stare. He must have been satisfied by what he saw, because he spoke in a less gruff tone than usual.
"We'll be landing shortly. If either of you knows of a good place to park on this God's forsaken rock, Rick would be glad to hear it."
"Yes, I'll tell him," Obi-Wan said. "There are several cities down there, even though it looks inhospitable."
Panaka gave Obi-Wan a dirty look, which Obi-Wan pretended not to notice. Qui-Gon waited until they left, tightened his shields, and then gave mental vent to some of the foulest invectives he had ever been taught. Tatooine was hotter than he remembered. Qui-Gon didn't think that was even possible. It made his decision to throw a burnous over his regular clothes in token bid to keep their identities secure seem utterly foolish, especially compared to what Obi-Wan had done. His partner had stripped off tabards, overtunic, belt, and sash, borrowing a much simpler leather belt from one of the pilots to wear over his shirt. His lightsaber he'd stuffed in his boot. The simpler garb made him look like a local, whereas Qui-Gon looked to be exactly what he was, an off-worlder trying to avoid notice. Padme had long practiced at avoiding attention, it seemed, and was wearing clothes that would blend in on half a dozen worlds. She was coming with them, but not at her own insistence like before. Obi-Wan had made the offer for her to join them in Mos Espa, and Padme had quickly accepted. Panaka gritted his teeth, but handed the girl a small holdout blaster which Padme had tucked out of sight inside her clothing. Anakin had been given a shirt from their sole female pilot. It was the same shade of blue as Padme's tunics, fell to his knees, and made them look like a matched set of visiting off-worlders. There wasn't much to be done about Anakin's Padawan braid, but it was still short, so Anakin left it unbraided and tucked behind his ear in hopes it would just be overlooked. Qui-Gon ordered Jar Jar Binks to stay with the ship. He understood the Gungan's curiosity, and sympathized with the youth's disappointment at not getting to see a new place. But Force. If anything could turn this trip into a disaster, it would be Jar Jar. R2-D2 was waiting by the ship's ramp as they prepared to leave. Upon seeing them, he whistled cheerfully and signaled the boarding ramp to lower. Qui-Gon eyed the droid.
"I suppose if I told you to stay here, you'd ignore me?"
R2-D2 regarded him, beeped three times, and rolled down the ramp. Qui-Gon bit back a smile, wondering what a droid with a smart-ass streak was doing in a queen's retinue. The long, hot walk to Watto's shop was uneventful. Qui-Gon decided to be grateful for small favors. Watto was glad to see them again. Or, at least, he was genuinely glad to see Anakin.
"Annie, my boy!"
the Toydarian exclaimed in Huttese, his wings flapping in a furious bid to keep his bulk aloft.
"It's good to see you. How are you?"
He gave the startled Padawan a hug, which Anakin returned in bewilderment.
"I'm fine, Watto," Anakin stammered, trying to shake off his confusion.
It's good to see you, too. The shop is doing great.
Yeah, yeah, so it is, Watto said proudly.
Then he caught sight of Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, and his smile was replaced by a thunderous frown.
Greetings, Watto, Obi-Wan said, granting the Toydarian a short bow. The years have been kind.
You!
Watto roared in Basic, pointing a bony finger at them.
If you came looking for more slaves to buy, I'm fresh out. Go bother someone else.
You know this creature? Padme asked, managing at the last moment to provide a word more diplomatic than whatever she may have been thinking. And you made a purchase? Of course they did, Anakin said, dismissing her concerns with a smile. Where do you think Watto knows me from? You were a slave? While Padme processed that realization, Qui-Gon caught Watto's attention.
We're here to make a regular transaction, I assure you, he said.
Watto's frown eased, and he flew closer, curious.
We're looking for parts for our ship, and believe you may be able to help us, Qui-Gon said, bringing out a small holoprojector and turning it on. Our astromech droid has a full list of the parts we need, but our primary concern is a hyperdrive motivator.
Watto peered at the display of the Queen's transport, scratching at the dark stubble on his chin.
Nubian. Nubian. I think I've got some of the things you need, but my motivator might not work for you.
Obi-Wan, in the middle of conferring with R2-D2 about the parts list in question, glanced over at them.
Oh? Something Anakin could fix?
Watto cackled and rubbed his hands together.
Maybe. I see you Jedi make use of the boy's natural talents as well. He's a good kid, Annie is. But this, I don't even know if he can fix. Let me show it to you.
They all followed the Toydarian out into his scrapyard. R2-D2's beeping went from curious to desultory. Anakin told them that he was complaining about all of the sand. Qui-Gon didn't really blame him at all, wincing as he was under the renewed assault of the midday suns. When Watto showed them the motivator, Qui-Gon wanted to curse. It was obvious that it was useless.
Anakin?
Obi-Wan beckoned for their Padawan to come closer.
What do you think?
Anakin looked at it before slowly shaking his head.
It's...
I don't know what happened to it. It looks like someone tried to blow it up while it was in use. It won't do us any good. I can't fix something that's missing most of what makes it work. And I don't get it, he added. This isn't even the same motivator that Watto had the last time. What changed?
You did, Anakin, Obi-Wan sent, a pensive frown on his face. You haven't been here for the past 4 years. You're the variable.
Well, shit, Anakin said, earning a swift reprimand from both of them for language unbecoming a young Padawan. Sorry. What do we do now? What are our other options, then? Padme asked, looking worried. We can't get back to Coruscant without a hyperdrive.
And there are no planets closer that wouldn't turn you over to the Trade Federation, Qui-Gon added.
The ship didn't have the supplies remaining to make another long trip anyway. Padme was more than likely well aware of the direness of their situation. Padme glared at him. Qui-Gon recounted his words and realized that he had inadvertently told her that he knew of her true identity also. She looked at them all. Her eyes narrowed. Anakin shifted his feet and tried not to look guilty.
I suppose you know, too? Padme asked Obi-Wan. He smiled, dipping his head in acknowledgement, and she sighed. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I'm surrounded by Jedi, after all. Don't feel too discouraged, Your Highness, Obi-Wan said, his voice soft in deference to Watto's proximity. Sabe does an excellent job. Not even Sayo Bibble noticed the difference, and he works with you every day.
Padme nodded. I have to admit, I'm surprised you asked me to come along, knowing who I was.
You either would have had Panaka order us into it, or followed along on your own. This seemed much safer.
Obi-Wan grinned at her.
Padme grinned back. I guess so, she said, and then sobered. What are we going to do, honestly?
Anakin tilted his head, considering the matter. There are other junk shops we could check. In the meantime, we can buy the other parts we need from Watto. He's got everything except the motivator. If I go back with the parts, I can make it all work.
Whether it wants to or not, he added, almost as an afterthought.
Padme leaned over and planted a quick kiss on the boy's cheek, making Anakin light up like a bonfire. You're willing to go back to the ship so soon, after everything you told me about this place?
It may be my home, but it'll still be here when all of this is done.
I can always come back, Anakin replied, utterly serious. You're my first priority. They stared at each other, smiling, and Qui-Gon sensed what he should have noticed from the start.
Force. The bond between them. Do they know what that means?
He asked, amazed. Obi-Wan touched Qui-Gon's hand.
One day they will. For now, they are children with more than a bit of a crush on each other. Everything else will come as it may.
I might be able to tell you where another motivator is, Watto spoke up.
They all turned to see the Toydarian rubbing his shoulder with one hand, looking nervous.
J-27s have dried up around here, and it's the only one I know about in the entire region. Before I tell you, you promise me you won't take those two with you, he said to Qui-Gon, motioning to Padme and Anakin. It's no place for children. It's no place for anyone. But it sounds like this thing is really important.
Obi-Wan stared hard at Watto. Qui-Gon felt him reaching out with the Force, testing the currents that surrounded them. Whatever he sensed made his eyes widen.
I promise they will not go, Obi-Wan vowed. Anakin, promise me that you will not follow us.
Anakin looked up at him, concerned and confused.
But I...
Please, Anakin. Obi-Wan cut him off. He glanced down at Anakin, the full weight of his strength and the Force in his gaze.
You know that I would not ask you to stay behind unless it was necessary.
Anakin swallowed hard and nodded.
Yes, I know that, Master. I promise I won't follow. Padme?
Padme stared at Obi-Wan, a little startled by his sudden change in demeanor. Before, Qui-Gon knew, she would only have seen the sight of Obi-Wan that he used in public. He bantered with people. He wasn't afraid to get dirty when there was building to be done, or when it was time to tear something down. He was as open with non-Jedi as he could be, and he tended not to use the Force around them in blatant displays unless they said or demonstrated that it didn't bother them. And it bothered many. Now, she was seeing the Jedi Master. The Force was collecting in enough strength that even someone who was Force-blind would have known something was about to happen. I promise, Padme said at last. If what Watto is saying is true, I wish that you did not have to go. But my people have to come first, and I must ask you to get what we need. Obi-Wan nodded. You must do your duty, and we must do ours. Padme stepped forward and gave him a swift hug. Take care of yourselves. Please. I want no blood on my hands. She embraced Qui-Gon in the same way. He found himself liking the young queen even more. There was strength to her, hiding behind the guise of youth, much like it did in Obi-Wan. Qui-Gon didn't realize it at the time, but the Queen of Naboo had just proclaimed herself their ally for life.